Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Samach Vav Amud Aleph. Gemara is about to get into the meat of Isur V'Heter here. And this is the beginning of these subyot. Chamra Atika Be'inve. If you have aged wine that got mixed in with grapes, our Mishnah spoke about the fact that if the wine got mixed with the grapes, you could just rinse off the grapes and everything is fine. But if the grapes somehow have either cracks in them or the stems are pulled out of them, then the wine does affect them. Benotein tam. So here the Gemara says that if you have aged wine with grapes, divrei hakol benotein tam. Everybody agrees that you have to look at this as an issue of notein tam and figure out whether there is tam or there is not tam over here. So what the Gemara is pointing out is that aged wine and grapes are different minim, are totally different types of taste, and therefore they have a din of min, which the Gemara is going to explain in a second. Chamra chadata binvi, on the other hand, if you have new wine with grapes, which is in essence grape juice with grapes, Abaye amar b'mashu, Abaye says, and we'll see in 1 second, min b'mino, these are similar in nature, their taste is very similar, and therefore they're considered to be min b'mino, and by min b'mino, we say that it's also b'mashu. Rabba amar b'notein tam. On the other hand, Rava says that it's no tain tam because it's still min she'enu mino. Let's explain. Abaye amar b'mashu. Abaye says here it's any amount makes it problematic. Batar tama azlinan. We follow the flavor when determining whether items are similar or dissimilar. Idividi chatamu. And when it comes to grape juice and grapes, they have a similar taste. Abale min b'mino. It's min b'mino and min b'mino b'mashu. Whenever you have two of similar types together, any amount makes it problematic. Rava amar benotein tam. On the other hand, Rava disagrees and says that grape juice and grapes is benotein tam. Butter shma azlina. We follow the name of the item. So even though they might taste similar, nevertheless, they're called different things. V'hai shma lachut. One is called grape juice and one is called grapes. And that makes them different. V'avei min b'she'enu mino. And that makes it into two separate items or different items. Min she'enu mino benotein tam. And we have a principle when it comes to items that are dissimilar in nature, then you test them by notein tam. If it flavors it, then it's problematic. If it doesn't flavor it, then it's not problematic. Now, a number of things to note in the big picture over here. First of all, Rashi says, by chamra chadato, by the grape juice, benotein tam, that is benotein tam according to Rava. Anywhere the Gemara mentions the term notein tam, ve'ein tamo nikar, and we can't figure out whether the tam is nikar, abishi'ura abishishim. And the shi'ir for that is 60 times. So what Rashi opens up over here is the possibility that one could test for the taste of the item. Notein tam literally means you can find that flavor there. It is flavoring the item. So if you have notein tam and we can't figure out, or it's not a discernible tam, how do we know what to do? So the answer is shishim. Chazal decided that 60 to 1 was significant enough that it is batel and you wouldn't taste the flavor. Whether that was empirical or whether Chazal took a number where you have in the Babylonian system, a base 6 system, and therefore 60 was a very large number for them. It's like we would say today, oh, 1,000,000 to 1 odds. So that's them. 60 to 1 was a number that was significant enough to say that, of course, there's no taste or no flavor in here. So it was a level of differential that made it certain that there wouldn't be any flavor. But indicative in Rashi is the fact that if you could taste for it, or if you could test for the taste, then maybe we would do that and we'd follow that in terms of testing the taste. The halacha, we have the principle, which is that a goy can, in these instances, taste the item and tell us the information, but that's only if he doesn't intend to do that. That is only if he's mesiach lefi tumo, which is that if the non-Jew tastes the item and happens to mention to us, oh, it has this flavor, or it doesn't have this flavor in it, then we can take that information into account. If he's trying to testify to us, we do not take it into account because he doesn't have ne'manut. When it comes to Yisurim, he doesn't have ne'manut. When it comes to edut. So it has to be something where by chance, or perchance, he happens to speak about it. That's the psak the Shulchan Aruch brings down. The Ramon afterwards says, we don't rely on that at all today, and we only use the numbers of 60 to 1, and therefore we don't test by notein tam of actually tasting or having a goy taste it. and let us know. But you see in this Rashi, that possibility of the Tom itself being able to be tested, and that 60 is just the default when we can't figure out whether the Tom is there or not. Rashi over here also says, "V'kol min b'mino b'mashu," that anytime we say min b'mino, it's b'mashu, "l'kaman paskinan delav hilchata hachi." Further on in the Gemara, we're going to paskin that that's just not true. That min b'mino doesn't have a din of mashu, but rather, elo afilu min b'mino b'no tein tam. Even by min b'mino, the din is no tein tam. Chutz mitevel v'yayin nesech. The exception of tevel and yayin nesech, that happens to be a machloka we're going to get to between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish on one side, which is the opinion that Rashi is bringing over here, and Rav and Shmuel on the other side, as to how far this din of min b'mino b'mashu goes. And here Rashi is quoting the fact that the din is different. You can see in the Masorah Shas already. He notes that Rashi d'ocha soter devarav b'chulin. The Rashi's statement over here goes against or contradicts what he says in Chulin. And if you look here in the Bach thinks that there is a problem in the Girsa over here. He says, "V'nir b'enai svarim achayrim." There are other svarim that had a different Girsa in Rashi. B'hochi hilchato. Rashi said, this is the halacha. To call min b'mino, dino b'mashu. Period. That min b'mino is b'mashu. Nuschazu b'peirsh Rashi, ikar, and that nusach that you find in Rashi, that's the real nusach. And then that way it would not contradict what he says in Chulin. It actually then be aligned with what he says in Chulin. He says, v'agazo, what is it doing in our Gemara over here? Shehi api peirsh Rabbeinu Tam, nitpesa b'toch peirsh Rashi b'taut. That's the view of the Rabbeinu Tam that was placed into Rashi's interpretation or Rashi's pshat, but that's not Rashi. That was mistakenly placed there because Rashi over here accords with Rashi in Chulin, where he says that min b'mino b'mashu applies to everything. So even though there is a machloket as to when min b'mino is b'mashu, again, first of all, it's a machloket amoraim coming up, and then a machloket ha-puskim. Nevertheless, in our case here, it really doesn't matter because here we're speaking about yayin nesech or stam yenam. And therefore, in our Gemara, everybody agrees, min b'mino has a din of mashu. Right? The next thing is the Balei Tosafot note that our Mishnah distinguished between notein tam lifgam and notein tam lishvach. Notein tam is only relevant when it gives a positive flavor or enhances the flavor of the item. It is not true when it is detrimental to the taste or detrimental to the flavor. The Balei Tosafot over here want to know if you believe that min b'mino is a sur b'mashu, then is there a concept of notein tam lifgam? And that goes back to some of the reasoning behind why min b'mino versus min she'enu mino, what's the difference between them? Again, we'll get to that when we discuss this machloket more in detail. But if you remember, the Ran in the Dorim is the one who really proposes a thesis in this. It proposes it both by isur and by tam, which is that when you have opposing items, they tend to be mevatel each other. When you have items that are positive and negative, they neutralize each other. And that's why min shebe'enu mino can neutralize each other, or they can be mevatel each other. That's both true by isurim and by flavor. Min b'mino doesn't work because they're the same thing. Since they are the same thing, they can't be mevatel one of the other because they are similar in nature. And if they're similar in nature, then they take on the similar taste. There's no way to discern, first of all, the taste. And number two is they're not mevatel each other because they're two positives or two negatives together, and therefore they're not mevatel each other. The Balei Tosafot say, based on that, if there's no bittul, when you say that it's b'mashu, means that there's no bittul over here, then maybe notein tam lifgam should also not be relevant in these situations. Because if the notein tam is not relevant, then why does it matter whether it's lifgam or lishvach? And that would be then a huge chumrah. By b'min b'mino, there would be no concept of notein tam lifgam. And that would be very difficult because notein tam lifgam gives us a lot of maneuverability, especially when you have things that are past 24 hours. That gives you a lot more ability than to be mekil. But if you say there's no notein tam lifgam, then you don't have that kula at all. He then goes on to speak min yonah d'yoma, that by Chometz b'Pesach, where Rav says that even by min she'enu b'mino it's mashu, that would imply that there's no notein tam lifgam, even by min she'enu mino. Balei Tosafot in the end say, you know what, there is notein tam lifgam, especially by min she'enu mino, by Pesach. He says, v'od mashu min b'mino ena tam batel klau, afilu be'elef, kevin she'atam shaveh. Aval lifgam atam batel, because it's a different tam. And since it's a different tam, it becomes the equivalent of min she'enu mino, and therefore it would be batel, although when the time they've come, we don't require a 60-to-1 ratio. We just require that it be lifgam. So therefore, it also says that the same time of gam is differentiated enough to make it that it is batel here, and it doesn't have the same din as mashu or a min bimino. There's a big Rabbi Kiva over here who says he doesn't really understand the Tosafot's whole logic behind this. And why the maskona, where we say that the din is based on shema, on name, and not on flavor, then why does the Bali Tosafot have any distinction to be made here? It should be the same thing, because Notin Dam Lifgam carries the same name. You can't separate between the two items, and therefore he's a little more circumspect about the Tosafot's statement over here. But in the end, that's a very big deal, whether you can apply Notin Dam Lifgam or not, with regards to Mashu by Min Bimino. So now the Gemara says, Tnan, our Mishnah, Yain Nesech Shnafala Gabe Anavim. You have here our Mishnah case, we have Yain and Anavim. This should be exactly what we're looking for to determine whether a bayi or rova is correct over here. Kasal kadatva, you assume, chamra charato binve. Our Mishnah is speaking about grape juice and grapes. My lav, binotein tam, velo b'mashu. Sounds like in the Mishnah that the issur, the restriction, comes from notein tam, not from mashu. And then that would be supportive of rova's contention that when you have grape juice and grapes, even though they taste similar, nevertheless, their names are different, and therefore their min bein will mino, and should be benotein tam. Gemara says, Hamaktanit Seifa, since the Seifa writes Zaklau, this is the principle, Koshe ba'anato menotein tam asur, Koshe min ba'ato menotein tam mutar, if it's notein tam l'shvach, it's problematic. If it's notein tam l'fgam, then it isn't problematic. Miklau, benotein tam askina. Because of the Seifa of the Mishnah, it seems to indicate that the Mishnah is speaking about in the world of notein tam. If that's the case, you have in the ratio a case of grape juice with grapes, and the Mishnah tells you that it is notein tam. So, v'abaye matnitin b'chamra atika binve. Very easy answer, because the Gemara says kasal kadatva, that we assume that the Mishnah is talking about grape juice and grapes. All Abaye has to say is, you're right, it's about notein tam. Just happens to be that the Mishnah is talking about aged wine and grapes. In that case, even Abaye agrees that it's benotein tam, because there are different flavors. Aged wine and grapes have totally different flavors, and therefore it's benotein tam. Now, chalo de chamra, v'chalo de shichra. If you have vinegar that derives from wine, and you have vinegar that derives from beer, v'chamira de chite, v'chamira de sare. And here you have chamira, which you're going to say in the bitul when it comes to Erev Pesach, ko chamira v'chamia. Chamira, Rashi notes over here, is se'or, means a rising agent, but generally in their day that means sourdough. So you have sourdough that came from wheat, and you have sourdough that comes from barley. Abaye Amar, in all of these cases, Abaye says, benotein tam. All of these are considered min, shebe'enu mino, butter taimas linon. We go after the taste, we go after the flavor. And when you have vinegar that comes from wine, and vinegar that comes from beer, the taste of that vinegar is a different vinegar. If you have sourdough from wheat and you have sourdough from barley, they have different flavors, and therefore they're min shebe'enu mino, and we just said before, when you have different items with different flavors, Abaye believes it's benotein tam. Min shebe'enu mino goes batar taima, and therefore, high time of the chud, high time of the chud, each flavor is independent, probably min shebe'enu mino. So therefore it's different minim, min shein mino, benotein tam. And everybody agrees, when it's min shein mino, it's benotein tam. Rav Amar b'mashu. Rav says that the Isser here is b'mashu. Butter shma azlinan. We go after the names over here. Vai chala mikre. That's called vinegar, and this is called vinegar. Yeah, they taste different, but they're both called vinegar. Now, today, it might be different, because if you go into the store on the shelf, it says wine vinegar, or it says vinegar, meaning that they actually do distinguish through the name, not just through the flavor. But in their day, it seems like they just called them vinegar, despite the origins of the vinegar. Since the names are the same, and the sourdough is the same. Even though the flavor of the wheat sourdough and the barley sourdough are different, nevertheless, they are both called sourdough. And given that, they're considered to be min b'mino, probably min b'mino, b'chol min b'mino, b'mashu. And anytime you have similar items, then they are not batel, even b'mashuhu. So over here you have an application of their din, but it turns out that then they are the opposite positions, which is before we were speaking about the grape juice and the grapes, where the flavor is the same, and Rabbi declared that min b'mino, and Rabbi declared that min she'enu mino, because the names were different. Over here, it's just the opposite. Here, the names are the same. So Rava is machmir and says it's min b'mino, but the flavors and the tastes are different, and therefore Abaye says that they are min she'en or mino. It's the application of their din, but turns out to give you the opposite result here because of the difference between the naming and the flavoring, when it's different names or when it's different flavors. Now Rashi over here claims that the case of chamira is a case where you have chad de chulin v'chad de truma, that you have a sourdough of chulin and you have a sourdough of truma. Naflu zeh l'toch zeh, and they fell into each other. There are other rishonim who don't like that explanation for a number of reasons, one of which is because truma is batel 100 to 1. So if you have truma and chulin that are mixed together, we know the din of truma is 100 to 1. And if that's the case over here, it should also be batel. And if it's batel, then why are you speaking about a mashu? And so that's why the Ritva thinks that it can't be speaking about chulin and truma, but rather has to be speaking about some other isur, like tevel or avodah zarah, where there is an isur b'mashu. And that's why he doesn't like the truma and chulin. The Ramban over here also discusses a problem with a mishnah in Orla, which seems to equate the sourdough of wheat with wheat itself, and says that they are considered to be the same thing. And that would not be like Rava and not like Abaye. It's actually against both of them. Because over there, the tastes are different. You have sourdough and wheat. And then you also have the fact that their names are different. One is sourdough and one is wheat. And both of them would have believed it's min she'en u'mino, yet the Mishnah in Orla says that they are the exact same thing. So from here, Ramban comes up with a principle, which is an important principle that is applied to halacha. Which is the Ramban says that if an item in the end will turn into the other item, then it's not considered to be different. So for instance, over there, where all wheat that is made into dough, eventually that dough, the wheat dough, will turn into sourdough. If you leave it long enough, it'll ferment and turn into sourdough. That makes them to be the same item. His proof is the fact that the Gemara over here never asks for Rav and Abaye between aged wine and grape juice. That would have been the simplest way to explain the machloka between them. They're both called wine, but they taste different. How come the Gemara never brings that as an example of the machloka between them? It speaks about grape juice and grapes, aged wine and grapes. Why does it just speak about aged wine and wine? That would have been the simplest way to explain it. You could argue that maybe they were called different things and they taste different. It's clear they taste different, but maybe in their day, aged wine and grape juice had different names to them, and so that it wasn't relevant. But if you believe that they're both called yayin, then why doesn't the Gemara mention them? The Ramban says for his principle, because wine in the end will always age. Wine will ferment in the end and reach aged wine. That means that grape juice and wine are considered to be mimin mimino because they have eventually will have the same tam. And that has implications in halacha, which is based on that, if you have items that in the end will turn out to be that item or can turn into that item, they will be classified as min b'mino, and that is a huge halachic ramification of how the Ramban explains this Gemara over here. Right now, the Abaye says, I'll prove to you that I'm right. I'm a Abaye min aminolo. I can prove to you the butter taimaz lidan. The flavor dictates what happens over here. Titanio, we have a brayta. Could be that it is also a mishnah, and therefore it would say ditnan. Depends on the exact girsa of what's written in here. Tavlin bet v'gimel shemot. If you have spices that have two or three different names, v'hein min echad, but they're the same thing. O min gimel, or you have three different things, asrim u'mitztarfim. They are sur and are mitztaref. So first of all, we'll explain it like Rashi, and then we'll come back and explain what the problems with that are, and the Bali Tosafot give an alternate explanation. Rashi says, tavlin bet v'gimel shemot, he's speaking about different types of pepper. He says it's like white pepper, black pepper, and pilpel aruch. That gives you three different types of peppers, which are different names, but they all have the same flavor, according to Rashi, so that it might look different, and it's even called something different, but they are min echad. They're all one species or one type of pepper. O min gimel, v'gimel shemot lahem, or they are min gimel, which means that there are three different types of items, and they have three different names. For instance, he says, if you have pipel, kimon, v'kinamon, pepper, cumin, and cinnamon, so that would be the three different types. So that's the way Rashi explains it. Rashi explains in the first case, you have three different named spices that all are the same species or same type of spice. Or in the latter half, you have three different spices with three different names and three different flavors to them. Then asurim u'mitztarfim, what Rashi says for asurim u'mitztarfim means if they are combined together, meaning that each one of them independently doesn't have sufficient amount to make a flavor difference, but together, jointly together, they do have enough to make that flavor, then they are mitztaref to make it asur. And the first thing is Tosafot doesn't like Rashi's explanation in terms of asurim u'mitztarfim. Rashi says asurim u'mitztarfim is one thing. They are asur if they are mitztaref. Meaning that if they come together to get to a quantity that is significant, then they are asur. Tosafot says that the way the Bright or the Mishnah writes it is asurim u'mitztarfim. They're two different terms completely. And therefore, he explains that asurim u'mitztarfim, zachem perish rashbam, the asurim dekamar, it's olomar asura isa o ekdera b'netinatam. The asur references to flavor imparted by these items. U'mitztarfim b'davar yevesh le'asur. And they come together in dry goods to make it asur, afilu below netinatam. Even if there is no flavor. Meaning that if you have a mixture of dry goods where there's no flavor, still there's no bittul, and therefore they're going to be mitztarif to make it large enough where you can't be mevatalit, and therefore they will cause a problem for that davar yevesh that they are mixed into. And in that way, Tosafot gives different meanings to the word asur and mitztarif. Asur is when it's flavoring an item. Mitztarif is in a case where it has nothing to do with the flavoring, it has to do with the quantity of the item in the other items that are there, and it makes it that it's impossible to be mevatel it. That's one thing. The second thing the Baal Tosafot deal with is the word shame. Over here, the way that we have the Brishta and the Brita quoted, Rashi's explanation works fine. Because it's bed v'gimel shemot v'ein min echad. You have three different names, as Rashi explained to us. Those are three different names. You have red pepper, white pepper, and long pepper. V'ein min echad means that they are one species or one type of flavor that they are imparting. O min gimel asurim. Or, if they are three different shemot and three different minim, that the gimel shemot is true by both cases, and then the gimel minim is that you have three different items. So Rashi explains in the beginning you have three different names with the same purpose or the same flavor. And then in the latter part you have three different names with three different purposes. And that's why Rashi explains the Mishnah. What the Baal Tosafot will point out is that in the seifa of that Mishnah there's Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon's explanation he thinks influences the first part of the Mishnah. And that is the fact that the Mishnah says, Bed v'gimel shemot v'heim min echad, o min gimel v'shem echad. They are three different types, but shame echad. They are one shame. For Rashi, that can't work. You can't have three different types with the same name. It just doesn't work that way. So therefore, the Baal Tosafot say that the word shame, and he proves it from other places in Shas, generally means isur. Shame echad or gimel shemot means it was one type of isur, it was multiple types of isur. And therefore, he explains the Mishnah, the Braita, in the following manner. Tavlin bet v'gimel shemot. If they are three different types of Isurim, one of them was Orla, one of them was Kilei HaKerem, one of them was Tevel. There are three different types of Isurim, V'heim Min Echad, but they're all pepper. They're all giving the same flavor, but they're three different Isurim. O Min Gimel, or it's a situation in which you have three different flavors, like Rashi said, you have Kinamon, Kamon, and Pilpel, that you have pepper, cumin, and cinnamon. So the three different flavors, but they are Shem Echad. They're all the same Isur. They're all Orla. They're all Kilei HaKerem. And that's the way that the Tosafot explains the Mishnah, that the word Shem does not mean the name of the item, but the type of Isur that's there. And in that way, he solves the problem, but he also reads the Mishnah slightly differently. He reads it, Bet v'gimel shemot v'heim min echad. O min gimel v'heim Shem Echad. He adds in that little phrase based on what Rabbi Shimon says in the latter part of the Mishnah. The reason Rashi does not accept that explanation, the Baal Tosafot, is because the way that the Braita or the Mishnah is set up is, Tavlin bet v'gimel shemot, vein min echad, o min gimel. It never mentions the shemot again, seemingly accepting what was said in the Resha. That means that bet v'gimel shemot is a given. Then the first case is where they're min echad, and the second case is where they're shlosha minim. So you have then shlosha shemot with min echad, or shlosha shemot with gimel minim. So now, Ba'amar Chizkiya, how come they're mitztaref? Because b'mine mitika askina, we're dealing with things that enhance the flavor of whatever you are cooking, And more literally, they sweeten the item. Hoel v'ru'in the matek behenet akteira. Since all these items do the same thing with regards to the akteira, even though their flavors might be slightly different, nevertheless, they're all in the same direction. So to answer your question about the peppers, yes, that a white pepper and a red pepper and a long pepper, we're speaking about, I think, peppercorns over here, they might have nuanced differences in their flavor, but they have generally, they have the same purpose in the akteira. They're giving a certain flavor. It might be nuanced which flavor, but it's a very similar flavor. And the same is true when you're speaking about items that sweeten the pot. When they sweeten the pot, they sweeten it in a way that enhances the flavor. And that even though, there are nuances, there's a difference between flavors when you're sweetening the pot, nevertheless, they are all in the same direction in terms of their flavoring. And therefore, Chizkiya says, that's why they're mitztaref over here. It's because all minei mikteira. Iyamar bishlama batar taimaz linon. If you go after flavor, kulei chad taimo. That's exactly what Chizkiya is saying when he explains this Mishnah, meaning that Chizkiya and the Braita, when he explains this Mishnah, indicates that they are all minei mitika. The reason that they're mitztaref is because they all have a similar purpose, which means that they all have a similar flavor. Again, it's not exactly the same, but it's enough in the same direction that we would say that they are mitztaref, and that is the view of Avayit. And if you go after the name, the Mishnah explicitly, or the Braita explicitly said that they each have independent names. So how could you be combining them and say that they're mitztaref and asurim if they have three different names, which is against the Rava? So this is a strong proof to Avayit's position over here, that taima, that flavoring makes a difference. So this is Abaye's proof. So according to Rashi, the main proof of Abaye is from the second line of the Mishnah, and you can see that in Rashi, where he says that, Vamar Chizkiya Hachi Kamar, this is the meaning of the Mishnah, Min Gimel, the Gimel Shemot Dehem. You have three different types with three different names to them, and that's what Rashi gave the example of Pilpel, Kimon, and Kinamon. So there are three different spices with three completely different names to them. And nevertheless, they are Mitztarfim, because of the tam that is connected between them. So according to Rashi, that second piece of the Mishnah, or Braita, is the most significant proof against Rovers, because there you have complete differentiation in the name, yet they're still considered mitzvah. And you need Chizkiya in order to explain the Mishnah according to Abaye, who says that tam dictates, because over here the Mishnah sounds like that even if it is different names and different spices, they're mitzvah. So how do you then reconcile that with Abaye through Chizkiya, where it says it's all one tam? But that's not necessary for the question on Rova. The Mishnah itself is inherently a problem for Rova because it says Shlosha Shemot. The Mishnah still says that they are mitzvah. According to the Balei Tosafot, where Shemot mean Isurim, it's not clear here that you have any distinction between the items. So now, in the latter part of the Braita, when it says Min Gimel Asurim, then you could argue that it's one shame, according to him, which is one shame isur, but there are three different types of spices, and those three different types, by definition, are going to have three different names to them, and that would be enough. Even though it's a shame echad and isur, there are different shemot with regards to the spicing, and that's what the proof is. Although the Ramban deflects that question by suggesting that the three different minim over here could be, like we mentioned before, chalad de chamra, chalad de shichra, could be speaking about vinegar that came from wine, vinegar that came from beer. And there, Rava would argue that they are actually separate minim because they have separate shemot, even though they're both the same min, which is vinegar. And therefore, even the seifa of the Mishnah is not problematic for Rava. And therefore, you have to say, according to the Balei Tosafot, that the main proof against Rava comes from Chizkiya. The fact that Chizkiya says that flavor is meaningful in these situations shows you that flavor dictates, and that the Ramban says is the main question against Rova, based on the Balei Tosafot's explanation. Rova Amar Lecha, Rova says, no problem, Hamani Rabbi Meir he. The author of that Mishnah, or that Braita, is Rabbi Meir. That's why you have this din, but this din is not applicable in general. And that is because the Tanya, Riyodo Mer Mishum Rabbi Meir, Minayin Lekol Yisurim Shvetarash Mitztarvim Ze Im Ze. Rabbi Yehuda says over in the name of Rabbi Meir, how do you know that any Isur in the Torah is mitzvah? Now, Rabbi Meir says his statement with regards to any Isur, not just things where, like our Mishnah over here says that they have the same flavor, or they're minimitika. He says it in general. Anytime you have Isurim Shem Torah, how do you know they're mitzvah? Shenemar, the Pasuk says, lo tochal kol toleva. You may not consume any abomination. Kol sheti avti lecha. Anything that I said to you is improper or unbecoming to eat, Harihu vival tocham. There's an iser of eating it. So toiva is a generic term that captures anything that Hashem said you should not be eating, or anything that is asur. And here you have a pasuk that says lo tocham, do not eat it. And therefore, this is an aggregating pasuk that tells you that every iser in the Torah is under the same restriction of not eating it. And that brings them all together. It's mitzarek them all together. So then, Rava basically is saying that the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir. You know why the Isurim here are mitzarek? Because it's Rabbi Meir. And if it's Rabbi Meir, then you can't prove anything because we don't hold like Rabbi Meir. We don't paskin like Rabbi Meir. Now, this leaves us in a little bit of a bind, which is, does Rava hold of Chizkiyah or not? Which is that over here, Rava comes along and says the Mishnah is authored by Rabbi Meir. Chizkiyah introduced a qualification in the Mishnah and said, oh, you know why they are mitzareif here? It's because they're all similar in purpose or flavor. Wait a minute. According to Rabbi Meir, it's irrelevant whether they are similar in nature, similar in their flavoring. Because Rabbi Meir says all these serim are mitzareif. So then he doesn't need Chizkiyah. So that's actually the way that Rashi reads it. Rashi over here says that when it comes to Rova's explanation of Rabbi Meir, Udechizkiyah leta, he doesn't hold of Chizkiyah. That will present a problem, because when we have a machloket, a bayin Rova, we say, Alocha ke Rova. It would imply that Rova is rejecting Chizkiyah's explanation of the Braita, which means that we are dropping Chizkiyah and passing like Rova. But the Balei Tosafot point out that in other places in Shas, it seems that the Gemara does accept Chizkiyah's explanation and does uphold Chizkiyah in terms of the explanation of this Mishnah. So if that's the case, you have now a contradiction in Psak. Some places the Stam Gemara thinks to pick up Chizkiyah. Over here, we have Rava who's rejecting Chizkiyah. Therefore, the Balei Tosafot come to a compromise and say that Rabbi Meir's din only applies when the Isser is be'en. When the Isser is actually there, he says all Isserim Shebetorah are mitzareif. But if it's just the flavor that is imparted by the Isur, where it's not be'en, it's not physically there, it's just the flavor that's there, over there, even Rabbi Meir agrees, you need to have some similarity between them for them to be mitzareif. And in that way, he can now reconcile between Rava and Chizkiyah, which is, when Rava explained this Mishnah or Braita over here, he was using Chizkiyah. Because over here, we're not talking about actual Isurim that are intact, we're talking about the flavors of Isurim. There, Rabbi Meir agrees that you can't be mitzareif anything, you can only mitzareif things that are similar. So then, the qualification of Chizkiyah still exists, and built on top of that, Rava brings Rabbi Meir. And now you can reconcile, paskening like Rava, which will say that the explanation in this Mishnah is Rabbi Meir, and therefore it's not relevant, but it's on top of Chizkiyah. It's using Chizkiyah to explain it, and that is that you require some commonality between them when it's talking about flavor, versus the case of Rabbi Meir, where you would need no commonality at all. The Ramban over here takes it one step further, and it's also important. What she says is that even Rabbi Meir agrees that not all Yisurim Shabbat Torah are mitzareif. The only mitzareif if they have the same shiur. Meaning that certain Yisurim are asur b'kezayit. Certain Yisurim are asur b'mashu. Certain Yisurim are b'kotevet hagasa, kebeitza. There are different restrictions in the Torah. And what the Ramban points out is that Rabbi Meir says his din with regards to items that have the same type of Isur, which is they are the same, I'm saying, same quantity of Isur, that quantity of item that makes them asur. So what the Ramban points out is that you see, even Rabbi Meir requires a commonality of some sort between them. So over here too, he'll hold of Chizkiyah because he needs some common denominator between them. If it's Shiur, if it's something else. And so to over here, Chizkiyah is giving you what the common denominator between these items are, and that is the Isur is providing the same type of flavoring. So even though they might have different Shiurim over here, the fact that they have the same purpose in the Kederah and the same flavoring in the Kederah, that makes them have a common denominator between them, which is where Rabbi Meir allows you to mitzareif, to bring the items together. So both according to the Balei Tosafot and the Ramban, Rava still accepts Chizkiyah l'alocha. Rashi says he rejects Chizkiyah and he moves on to Rabbi Meir to explain the Mishnah. Both the Ramban and the Balei Tosafot say that he accepts Chizkiyah because Rabbi Meir needs Chizkiyah, either because the Balei Tosafot say it's here an intangible item, it's no longer extant, it's just the flavor. According to the Ramban, even Rabbi Meir agrees you need some common denominator between these items in order to be mitzareif them. Now the Balei Tosafot over here introduces also another issue, which is lav shebeklalot. We have a principle that if a single lav gives you multiple different isurim that stem from it, it's a lav shebeklalot and you don't get malkot for it. Nevertheless, the Balei Tosafot say here, even according to one who says lav shebeklalot, ain't lokin alav, Over here, you would get malkot. Because this lavshi beklalot is different. Where do we say that lavshi beklalot you don't get malkot for? Is where the isur derives from the lav itself. The lav itself is the source for the isur. So if you have multiple things that derive from a single lav, for instance, ki im tzli esh, you're only allowed to eat the korban of Pesach as tzli esh, as a roasted item. And from that, we have a number of items that are excluded. It becomes a lav shebichlalot. The isur itself derives from the pasuk, and that's what makes it into a lav shebichlalot. Similar by nazir, mikol asher yitze mi'agefen. Similar idea that anything that derives from the grape is problematic. There it's a lav shebichlalot. Over here, it's not a lav shebichlalot because the isurim are all defined independently. You need a separate isur in the Torah to even get here. Before you can say, anything I told you is problematic, you may not eat. But that means it has to be problematic somewhere else. And what the Baal Tosafot will point out is that each one of the items here has an independent isur. All this is telling you is that if you have an isur, you're asur b'achila. But that's not a lav shebichlalot, and therefore Baal Tosafot say you will get malkot here for eating these items based on Rabbi Meir. Even though it looks like a lav shebichlalot, it's really not a lav shebichlalot. Okay, now the Gemara jumps into a new topic. The topics possibly are correlated. And that's what it's hard to know here, whether the Gemara thinks that it happens to be a machlokes Abaye and Rava, and that's why they brought it over here, or whether they think that it is actually connected, and the two items are in some way similar in nature, which is chala lego chamra. If you have vinegar that falls into wine, diriyako benotein tam. Everybody agrees that the consideration here is min she'enu mino, and therefore it's notein tam. Chamra lego chala. Then if it's wine that's falling into vinegar, Abaye mar b'mashu. Abaye says that it's considered to be min b'mino, therefore it's a mashu. Rav amar b'notein tam. And Rav, on the other hand, says it's min she'enu mino, and therefore it's notein tam. The direction of what's falling in obviously has impact over here, and that you can already see in Rashi, which is that when the vinegar falls into the chamra, into the wine, over there we don't say that the vinegar affects the properties of the wine, or that the wine affects the properties of the vinegar. Vinegar is much more pungent in nature, and it's overwhelming, both in its smell and its flavor. But if it's falling into something that, as Rashi says, is ruba chamra, the majority of it is chamra, the majority is wine. It's interesting that Rashi uses the term ruba over here, because we know for notein tam that the 60 to 1 is the ratio. Rashi says over here, as long as the robe is chamra, it does not, the vinegar does not impact. So the vinegar will remain vinegar until it hits the wine, but it first of all won't affect the wine once it's in there, except if it's notein tam, except if it flavors it. And the wine itself won't affect the vinegar because the vinegar is stronger, both in pungency and smell and taste, and therefore it remains vinegar till the moment it hits the wine. So that means on the way in, it's vinegar all the way. Then once it hits the wine, it doesn't necessarily affect the wine unless it's been notein tam. It's strong enough to affect the flavor of the wine, and that's why everybody agrees it's been notein tam. In the reverse scenario, you have wine that is falling into vinegar. There, vinegar is the majority. Now, when vinegar is the majority, again, the pungency and the flavor of the vinegar is so powerful that once the wine, which is a small quantity, comes into the airspace of the vinegar, it already takes on properties of the vinegar. That means that if you were to smell that wine right now, all you would smell is vinegar. It would smell like vinegar because it's so overwhelming, the vinegar, that it changes the smell of the wine to vinegar, even though if you tasted the wine at that point in time, it would still taste like wine. So that means that possibly it was already converted to vinegar before it touches the vinegar. And that's the machloket over here. Abaye and Rav are arguing when it comes into the airspace of the vinegar, and now it smells like vinegar, even though it tastes like wine, what is the status of that wine at that point in time, right before it falls into the vinegar? Is it vinegar? And then it would be min b'mino, and then it would be asur ibn b'mashu. Or is it min she'enu mino, and therefore when it falls in, it would be benotein tam? And that's the machloket. Baye amar b'mashu. Baye says that it's a mashu. Recha chala, b'taima chamra. If it smells like vinegar and it tastes like wine, chala, it is vinegar. B'havale min b'mino, and therefore it's min b'mino. B'chol min b'mino b'mashu. That's a mashu. Rav amar benotein tam, recha chalav, it smells like vinegar, b'taima chamra, and it tastes like wine, chamra, then it is wine. So here they have a machloket as to what dictates. Does smell dictate, or does flavor dictate? So according to Abaye, smell dictates what the properties of this item are. Now it's classified as vinegar because it smells like vinegar even though it tastes like kamra. On the other hand, the Rava believes that it is taste that dictates. So now the problem you have is, this seemingly is in opposition to what they said before. Before, Abaye said taste dictates, not the name. And Rava said name dictates, not the taste. And over here, Rava is saying taste is more important. And Abaye is saying that taste is subordinated to the smell. You can see that in the Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, I don't understand some of the distinctions that are being made here. He says, Kashali, demabakach nikra chala. Who cares if it's called vinegar? Meikol makom lavi kmo chala de chamra v'chala de shikra. It should be like vinegar of wine and vinegar of beer. Labaye does all butter time aloavi min bimino. According to Abaye, even if it's called chala, vinegar this and vinegar that, and has different names of vinegar, if they taste the same and they're vinegar, then that's it. They join together. The tam becomes one and it doesn't matter what the name is. And similarly, he says, Kashli Arova. The lo mikre chala, even if it's not called vinegar, mikomakoma pashut, it came into kalat recha the chala, since it took on the flavoring of the smell of the vinegar, sofala sot chala legamre. In the end, it's going to be turning into vinegar. And it's going to be min bimino. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger is pointing out that Abaye and Rava's positions can't be reconciled with what they were saying before, and therefore that would drive you to say that we're talking about different items over here or a different question over here rather than we were discussing before. So you could say that this machloket has nothing to do with the other machloket, and that over there they were discussing what's the standing of these items when the flavor or the name, what dictates. Over here we're talking about things where we don't know what the name is, and here they're not discussing what the name is, they're discussing how people reference these items. Which is, what do people call these? When you have something that smells like vinegar and tastes like wine, do they call it wine or do they call it vinegar? It's not in a case like before where we have an exact name for the item and an exact flavor for the item. There, we have a contradiction between the name and the flavor. Over there, Bias says flavor dictates, Rubba says name dictates. Over here, I have a problem because I don't know what the name is because I don't know how people deal with these types of items. What do they consider these types of items? Therefore, it might be a totally separate question. Or you could argue that this is similar to the previous machloket. And there, Rava says, right, tam is irrelevant when you speak about the names. The names of the items will dictate. Over here, we don't know what the name of the item is because it's in this in-between state. When it's in that in-between state, then flavor will dictate. And Abaye says, I say flavor dictates. But flavor dictates when there's no other smell. But when the smell is different than the flavor, that becomes the flavor of the item. And that is the tam of the item. And in that way, you could possibly connect between their positions before and their positions over here. Again, this is a machloket within the Rishonim as to whether this is a derivative of what we said before or this is a different din than what we said before. It just happens to be a machloket Abaye and Rava by mi b'mino, min she'enu mi'mino, but they're not necessarily correlated in terms of their reasoning. The Gemara says, Hai batia, this situation of batia. Rashi says, batia is where they drill a hole into the ceiling of the barrel in order to smell the wine. Now, they're not smelling the wine to get some pleasure from smelling the wine. They want to test where it is in its fermentation or aging process. And so they drill a hole to see whether they can leave the wine to age further or whether it's time to start using this wine or maybe the wine is actually turning into vinegar at this point and they need to take it out immediately. So that's the reason that they do this. They drill a hole in it in order to smell it. Bali and Tosafot don't love that explanation because of the word bat. The word bat is not explained by Rashi. The tiha is explained by Rashi, which is the flavor, the smell that you're getting. You're going to smell it. But the bat, what's the word bat mean over here? And therefore, the Bali Tosfo quotes the Rabbeinu Chananel, she says, B'yesh kaneh shakua v'tocha chavit. There's already a straw that is inside of the barrel. U'bolek lechutz, and it's coming out. We had this machloket before about exactly what was dealing with the sealing around the sealant of the cheres. And over there, the Bali Tosfot quoted this idea of the Rabbeinu Chananel. It was a case where they had put the straw in originally to allow the fermentation and the gases that came out to escape so that it wouldn't explode or it wouldn't overflow or cause the liquid to come out. Then afterwards, they sliced down that straw to be even with the migufa. So this might be that same straw that is there already. Then he takes, say, the tocha kaneh, you take a kamin dad. You put inside of that straw either another straw or some sort of nipple, and through that you smell it. So So well, first of all, what he solves with doing that is that now we understand the word bat. And over here, bat would mean a secondary or an item that is considered to be inside or a derivative of the first, which is you have a straw, and then you have something going into the straw. So that would be the bat tia. The tia exists already, and now you're putting a bat, you're putting something into it. Now the truth is that the Rabbeinu Hananel's explanation is a little more complex. Rabbeinu Hananel says that they actually drew wine out. That they actually then created a vacuum or suction on that piece, and then the wine poured out. They never actually drank the wine, they never tasted the wine. They just wanted to bring wine out in order to smell it. Rashi says, and the Bali Tosfot seem to agree with Rashi, is that in the end they're just looking to smell it. Even when they put the second straw inside of that straw, all they're trying to do is smell that which is inside. They're not bringing any wine up, and we'll see that that has implications with regards to the next statements of the Gemara. So Tosafot then goes on and says you could defend Rashi's position and say that when they put a smaller straw inside the bigger straw, according to Rashi, in order to smell it. So that would be the way that you deal with Rashi and call it a bat tiha, because he needs something that being derivative or secondary or inside of, and therefore he's explaining the word bat according to the way that the Rabbeinu Hananel does. So now that bat tiha, ove kuchavim b'Yisrael, if you have a non-Jew smelling the wine of a Jew, shapir dami, then it's no problem. It's not considered to be yayin nesech now, it's not considered to be maga, ove kuchavim b'yayin. Now for the Rabbeinu Hananel, it's very understandable what the Gemara is speaking about here, because according to Rabbeinu Hananel, he's pulling wine out. Even though he's pulling wine out, we don't consider it to be mago, even though it's kocho. Even it's because of his koach that is coming out, because it's not really his koach. His koach starts the vacuum or the siphoning that begins, then the wine comes up by itself, and therefore it's not considered to be mago, and that's a chiddush. According to the Rashi and the Bali Tosafot, what's the chiddush here? Because he stuck his nose into the pipe to smell it? Why should that be considered mago over another kochavim? What the Bali Tosafot say is that we're not gozer otu, the opposite scenario. Which we'll see in a second, the opposite scenario is problematic. You could have thought you would be gozer in this case, otu the other case. And therefore, the Shapir Dami tells you we're not gozer. So then, Yisrael bid Obed Kochavim. If a Jew is smelling the Obed Kochavim's items, Abaye Amar Asur, Rava Amar Mutar. Abaye says it's problematic. Rava says it's Mutar. Abaye Amar Asur Recha Miltai. This seems to be consistent with Abaye's position before, that Reach, smell, is the primary factor, and therefore, Reicha Milti, we take smell very seriously, to the point where, if you're now smelling this item, you're considered to be as if you are now getting something from this item that is a sore, and that's why it'd be restricted. Rav Amar Mutar. Rav says, Mutar, Reicha Lav Milti. Smell doesn't dictate. Before he said, when you have competition between smell and taste, taste dictated because smell is irrelevant. Reicha Lav Milti, according to Rava. So this would be consistent with their opinions before. The Bali Tosafot point out over here that when we say over here, Reicha Miltahi is according to Abaye, we don't simply mean that Reach has significance. We mean that when you smell something, it's as if you're drinking it. It is so significant to the point where when you smell this item, it's considered as if you are now consuming the item. So it's an intangible item that has, quote unquote, tangible impact. The same way that when you drink something, you're taking something tangible, ingesting something tangible, so too when you smell something, even though it's intangible, because of the potency of the smell over here, it's considered to be as if you've ingested this item, according to Abaye. You cannot say that it's simply smelling the item or enjoying the smell of the item, because the Bali Tosafot point out that we have a problem with what's called ziluf of yayin nesech. You're not allowed to sprinkle the wine of yayin nesech to give an aroma or some sort of smell to the room. He says that even Rova over there would answer it. Because over there, the problem is Hana'ah. And you're not allowed to get Hana'ah from Yayin Nesech. And Rova agrees with that, and Abai agrees with that. If you're getting Hana'ah, it's problematic. Over here, so then why does Rova disagree over here? Here you're getting Hana'ah from it. So the answer the Bali Tosafot will give is that here, it's such a potent and concentrated smell, the time of the Rova, the lo choshiv leket shoteh, Rova thinks it's not like drinking, lefisha riach nechnas bifanav, comes into his face, umeziko. And it hurts him. It's so pungent, so powerful and concentrated that it's not enjoyable. It pushes him back. And therefore the detrimental effects exceed the enjoyment of the smelling bishari, and therefore it is mutar. So the Bali Tosafot set this up as a case where it's unique to this circumstance. It's not about smelling in general. Smelling in general is a din in hana'ah. And that'd be a question. Is this asur ba'ana'ah? Not asur ba'ana'ah. That'd be the question. Here, the question is it considered like ingesting? And that's because you have, through this straw, you're going to have such a concentrated exposure to the item that it's considered equivalent to ingesting the item because it's so powerful in coming out. So Abaye says that Recha Milte, and it's as if you're drinking it. And then Rava says, I agree, Abaye, that it's so powerful and concentrated, it should be like drinking. Problem is that it's so powerful that it actually has deleterious effects as well, and it overwhelms the benefit of the smell, and therefore it's not considered to be like shtia over here. And the Baal Tosafot are doing this both in order to reconcile with the other places where we have Isur Hana'ah that derives from smelling, but also to deal with, we're going to see in a second, a huge issue with regards to Psak, as to whether this case is similar to a Machloket Rav and Levi that we have other places in Shas, as well as Abaye's position that other Rishonim raise that is distinguished in other places in Shas, where he doesn't seem to indicate Recha Miltahi. And then how do you deal with that? Because over here he says Recha Miltahi. So you have to somehow differentiate between this case and other cases of Recha Miltahi. So Tosafot does it by saying that it's a difference in concentration of the smell versus something where it's just a general odor. Others express it as a difference between something that is exposed to the elements in general, which is that when you sprinkle the wine, it's exposed to the elements, and therefore it disperses amongst the room. And that's a smell that can be hana'ah-like, versus a smell where it's contained all in the barrel, and it's not exposed to the elements. And then you are smelling it directly from the barrel without any exposure, rather disbursement into the air in general. So it's similar to what the Tosafot is saying, but a slightly nuanced difference between them. But the idea being that you have to distinguish between the smell here versus smell in general. So now, this is also somewhat different than what we said before, because before the Gemara was speaking about Reach and Tam. Now, where they were trying to determine whether the smell or the Tam is what dictates what the item is. Over here, we're trying to determine whether Recha Miltei means, is smell in of itself something that is significant or considered to be a violation of the Isur. So again, you could differentiate between this and the case before, even though the Gemara lined them up here because they seem to have the same din, which is Recha Milti, has application in both of these issues. So Amar Rava, Mina Aminala, Derecha Velo Klumu. I'll prove to you that smell does not have impact. That's not. We have a Mishnah. Tanur Shehisiko Bekimon Shotruma. You have a oven that was fired up with cumin that was of Truma. Vafo Boetapat. And then they baked bread in it. Hapat muteret. The pot does not have a problem. Using cumin of truma, it's fired up with this cumin of truma, so that's giving flavor inside of the oven. You're baking bread in there. Fishein batam kimon el areach kimon. Because there's no flavor of kimon in this bread, there's only a smell of kimon in this bread. Given that, it is mutar. Rabaye says no problem. Shani hotam the mikla isurei. Because the Isur disappeared, it's no longer extant over there. So here you have, first of all, the case of Truma over here is a case where it's not Asur b'hana'ah. You know, Truma is only Asur b'achila. A Zar is allowed to get benefit from the Truma. So the fact that it imparted flavor to the bread would be problematic. But here it's only giving a smell or some sort of reach to the bread. So giving a reach to the bread is not an achila. That is just a smell, it is giving you hana'ah. And so, by truma, hana'ah is mutaret. And that's why there's no problem over here, because it's just reach, it's not a consumption. According to you, Abaye, you're telling me that reach is like consumption, then why isn't this like eating truma, when the smell of the kimon, of the cumin, is now a part and parcel of the bread? Abaye's answer is, you have to distinguish. When the item is still extant, meaning the other underlying item that is producing the smell, then you can say that it's like you're ingesting it. On the other hand, when the item itself is gone, it's been burnt up, all that is left is the smell. That is something that is more, I call it ephemeral. It's not something that has enough significance to it that it's considered like you are ingesting the item. And that's the distinction that he's going to make. Now, the Gemara here brings this machlok between Abaye and Rava, suggesting whether Recha Milta or Recha Lav Miltahi. Truth is that we have exact same machloket between Rav and Levi. And Rav says that it's asur. When it comes to Recha Miltoi, it's asur. And Levi says it's mutar. That means that Rav here aligns with Abaye, and Levi aligns with Rava. So there we have a Gemara in Psachin that brings this machloket between Rav and Levi. And over there the Gemara brings a brighta supportive of Rav's position. And yet Rashi says, even though there's a brayta supporting Rav, we pass in like Levi. How does he know we pass in like Levi? He says, because Levi and Rava have the same opinion. Rashi sees that sugya of Pesachim being aligned with our sugya over here. And that means that even though the halacha would have been like Rav over there because we have a brayta supporting him, nevertheless, Levi says mutar, Rava says mutar over here, machoket Rava and Abaye, halacha kerava. And based on that, Rashi says the halacha is like Rava over here and like Levi over there because they share the same opinion. And that pasuk kach Rashi, prepare ketzat solin. That's how Rashi paskins the halacha. And Tosafot says, below Nira. He says, that's not true. And he brings examples of piskei halacha that derive from that sugya that seem to indicate the halacha is like Rav. And if the halacha is like Rav, then how do you reconcile that here with the fact that the halacha is going to be like Rava? He says, v'chein nira, t'vadei halacha ki Rav dehotam recha milti. Everybody agrees over there that recha milti and the halacha is like Rav. The halacha ki Rava nami hoki. And here the halacha is like Rava, gabi batia de recha la milti. The recha is not a milta. Well, how do you do that? How can you reconcile between Rav over there, it says recha milti, and Rava over here, it says that recha is la milti. And he says, Abaye himself will agree. Even though Abaye says Recha Milta over here, he agrees that over there I can pass him like Rav or like Levi. I can even hold like Levi who says Recha Lav Milta. And that is because there's a difference between the cases. And this is what we discussed before, but it's very important. It says, Deshani Hocha, Shunene, Umeiriach, Mene Yisur, Ayayin, Atzmo. Over here, he's getting benefit and smelling from the wine itself. Hilka kavi the gamre kilu shote min ayayin atzmo. This is what the Baal Tosfot said before, that the smelling over here is an intense type of smelling where we would equate it with the consumption of the item. And that's why Abaye thinks over here that recha milta, because it's a concentrated smell with the wine that is still here producing this smell, and it's so pungent and so concentrated that it's as if you're ingesting that type of smell. And that's why he says recha milta. But aval hotam over there, inuela reach haisur nichnas betocha heter. Over there, you just have this flavor aroma floating around in the oven. The isur is gone, and now you're just dealing with a flavor that's floating around. And he's eating the heter, and it has some smell of isur associated with it. Maybe Abaye would agree even there reach halav milti, or he could possibly subscribe to Levi's position over there that says it's mutar. Obviously, he couldn't hold like Rav that it's a sur, because then it would be consistent. But he even told like Levi that it's mutar. But Rav Nami, Rav over here, the Ochas Amrle Ano the Amrei Afilu Kirav. He says, even though I believe over here Recha Lav Milti, I hold like Rav over there. Damar Hotam Recha Milti, the Shani Ocha, Shareach Metziklo. This goes back to what the Baal Tosfot said before, that the concentrated smell, even though it's like ingesting, and Rav agrees with that, but here there's a deleterious effect. It's so powerful or so pungent that it actually hurts him and overwhelms the benefit that he's getting because it goes into his body. The kachamar, the recha lav milti. That's why I think of here recha lav milti. But over there in the Gemara and Pesachim, where it's a gentle flavor and it's a gentle smell, I can even hold like Rav that recha milti. In that way, Tosafot allows us to reconcile between these two sugyot. One of his biggest proofs is, why doesn't the Gemara bring the Machloket Abaye Rav over there by Rav and Levi, or why doesn't it bring Rav and Levi over here by Abaye and Rav? If the Machlokot are the same, they should have been aligned somewhere in the Gemara. The fact that the Gemara doesn't bring them means that they've seen that they're different issues. That's what the Baal Tosfot suggests over here, that this Machloket is independent of the Machloket there, because you have different gradations of smell that are imported. And each one of those gradations will result in a different Machloket, and actually a different outcome. Now, Tosfot over here also discusses the issue of shvach etzim bepat, which is that we saw earlier that if you have etzim of orla or etzim of isur that fall into the oven, and then you heat up the oven with those etzim, we have what's called shvach etzim bepat, and then the pat is asur. So now, if you had orla or you had something that was asur in the oven, that would cause the pat to be cooked with something that is isur, and then how you can't eat the pat. So Tosfot says, why don't you have the same thing over here? Here, where the cumin was used in the firing up of the oven, so why don't we say shvach etzim bapat? So what the Baal Tosfot point out is, over here, we're speaking about truma. And truma is not asur bahana'a. It's only items that are asur bahana'a that we say shvach etzim is in the pot. So by orla and by avodah zarah, where the items are asur bahana'a, if you heat up the oven and fire up the oven with them, and then you heat up or break the item in that oven, then they have what's called shvach etzim bapat. The etzim have an impact on the pot, or the value or the benefit of the etzim is found in the pot, and therefore they become asur. So that's only because there's an Isra Hana'ah associated with them. By Truma, where there's only an Isra Achila, not an Isra Hana'ah, then the Shvach Etzim B'Pat is not relevant, because it's not flavoring the pot. It's making the pot heated and baked and cooked now. Yeah, so it's benefiting the pot, but that's not an Isra Hana'ah. And by Truma, there is no Isra Hana'ah. And then the Baalei Tosfot go on to say something which is, Halacha L'maisa again, when it comes to Etzim on Shabbat or Yom Tov, if you have wood that is put in an oven on Shabbat and Yom Tov, and the wood is muksa. So now, if you bake the bread with muksa wood, why don't you say shvach etzim b'pat? So Tosafot here uses the same argument. It says that when it comes to muksa on Shabbat, there's an Isra either of tiltul, and there might be an Isra achila of eating muksa, but there is no Isra hana'ah from muksa. And therefore, if you heat up the oven with muksa wood, it won't be a problem. Now, in general, that doesn't matter, because you're not allowed to use muksa, it's asur to use the muksa. So it has nafkaminot in two places. One is, what happens if someone cooks on Shabbat? Bishogeg. By accident, they cooked on Shabbat, and they made a mistake. The wood was muksa, because the wood's muksa, whether it was cut today, or was cut beforehand, wood is muksa on Shabbat. So you have wood that is muksa. Nevertheless, the Mishnah says, a third party is allowed to eat that item. Why are they allowed to eat it? Because there's no Isra Hana'ah associated with by the muksa. So that's one of the Baalei Tosfot's proofs, but it's also a nafkamina that you're allowed to eat it. The second nafkamina he brings is a case where, Omikan yesh latir pat chama, shenefe b'yom tov, dein le'sur mishom, deshem ha'itzim shenefe mehen nitlushu ha'yom u'muksimim. If a non-Jew bakes bread on Yom Tov, do you have to worry about whether the wood was designated beforehand for the cooking, or whether it was cut on that day? Because now the wood has etzim, has the wood of Isur in there, and you're going to say, Shvach etzim b'pat. That's what it says. According to my thesis, you don't have a problem, because muksa is not osur b'ana'ah, and therefore there's no Shvach etzim b'pat. And that means that if a goy bakes bread on Yom Tov, again, assuming that you can eat the bread of a goy, the Baalei Tosfot think that pat akum went away completely, and therefore it's mutar to eat the pot of a goy. And given that, if he bakes on Yom Tov, so even though the wood might be muksa or it might have been cut today, you don't have to worry about it because there's no such thing as shvach etzim b'pat when you're dealing with dinyei hana'ah. The other thing he says, but v'im mishum shema takanu achitim ayom, what about the fact that the goy might have milled the wheat today? Or niloshu, or it was only kneaded today, ein b'kach klum. Kevin to me, karav odem chitim ay ruin the kos. Because before, when they were raw, you could have chewed them, and you could have ground them down by chewing them in a way that is heter. Miu be'ai gavna chashiv lehu nolat, that it's considered to be nolat, you should tachanan be yom tov. When you actually grind them or mill them on yom tov, then you have nolat. You have an item that's changed its properties, or the way it looks. That's called nolat, and that's the type of muksa. Miu, rabbi chia yenoek heter badavar. Even though it was nolat, he still said it wasn't a problem of using those items on yom tov. Here it's different. When you're talking about the etzim, you're talking about the shvach etzim b'pat, that's an Isra Hana'ah. But when the bread is made up of wheat that was milled today, that's nola, that's muksa, and you're actually eating the muksa. So that might be problematic. He says, despite that fact, Rabbeinu Yechiel said it was fine. V'gam b'shabbat, yesh matimim likach pat chama min ovi kochavim. So some people say that you can, for that same reason, you can get hot bread from the goy on Shabbat, mitaim of the pirashti. For the same reason I explained before, that when it comes to these items of muksa, it's shvach etzim b'pat, it's not a problem. And again, assuming that even if they milled it on Shabbat, it's not a problem of nolad, then there's no Easter here from taking the pot of the akum. Amnam, bebet yamim shu Rosh Hashanah, shama mori sheish osrim. You have 2 days of Rosh Hashanah, some people say it's asur, which is very interesting, because Shabbat is more chamur than Rosh Hashanah. Yet over here he's saying it's mutar on Shabbat, problematic on Rosh Hashanah. He explains why. Because he says, "Lefamim a katzir nimshach ad Rosh Hashanah." Sometimes the harvest in these countries that they're living in—it's true in North America as well—the harvest time is in the fall, and sometimes the harvest goes all the way through Rosh Hashanah, which means that they're actually harvesting the wheat on Rosh Hashanah. Now that's an Isra Malacha that would not be heter on Rosh Hashanah to be kotzer. Even for a Jew to do katzirah for ochel nefesh is not permitted on Yom Tov. And therefore, there would be something that's completely asur. It's a kotzer on Yom Tov. And then if he then, on the second day of Yom Tov, makes that into bread, you're using wheat that was harvested yesterday on the first day of Yom Tov for the second day of Yom Tov, and he says that's problematic on the Yom Tov Sheni. He says, Nachum Machmir b'shnei Yomim Tov v'shel Rosh Hashanah. For that reason, it's worth being Machmir on the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah. But here he has a huge kula, which is that you can buy hot bread from a goy on Yom Tov, and you can buy hot bread from a goy on Shabbat, because there's no problem of shvach etzim bapat. And again, the milling of the item does not make it into nolad, and therefore it's not a type of muksa that is asur for the Jew to consume on Yom Tov or on Shabbat. But technically, that might be a way on this 8th day of Pesach this year in Eretz Yisrael, where it's on Shabbat, and it's no longer Pesach, you have a goy provide the bread. We don't paskin like this, Dvalia Tosafot, but if you did, according to Dvalia Tosafot, you could have hot bread on the 8th day, which is Shabbat, which isn't Pesach anymore here in Eretz Yisrael. You could have hot bread then for Shabbat, even though you can't prepare it on Pesach and have it ready for Shabbat. All right, now the Gemara finishes off with Amar Rav Mari, Kitanai A. This machloket of Bayin Rovo is actually a machloket Tanaim. A Radev Pat Chama, someone who scrapes out hot bread from the oven, not now, Pi Chavit Shel Yayin Shel Truma. And then he puts it on top of a barrel of wine that can wine up Truma. Rabbi Meir was there. Rabbi Meir says the flavor of the Truma wine now is imparted into the dough or to the bread that is there. Rabbi Yehuda Matir, Rabbi Yossi has an in-between opinion, which is Matir B'Shel Chitim, says by Chitim it's okay, Voser B'Shel Seorim. But he says it's problematic by Seorim, Ibnei Shel Seorim Shu Avot. Because the barley is more absorptive in nature, it pulls in the flavor. So what you see here is that the machlok between them is the flavor of the wine of Shuma below imparted into the bread that is above, the hot bread that is above. Rabbi Meir says yes. So he's saying Rechamilti, the flavor that is imparted through the smell is significant enough, and therefore it's going to make the bread asur. On the other hand, according to Rabbi Yehuda, Rechalav Milti, and therefore the flavor that's imparted is not meaningful in this case, and therefore the bread is fine, it's mutter to eat. My lab, Bahakamifligate. This is the machlok between them, as we just explained. Marsava Rechamilti, that's Rabbi Meir, and that will accord with Abaye. Marsava Recha Velav Klomo. And Rabbi Yehuda believes that Reich is nothing, just like Rava says it's nothing. So Gemara says, the Rava, Badai Tanayehi. You're right. According to Rava, the only way to explain that Mishnah and Truma is a Machloket Tanayim. Because Rava says Reich Olav Milti. It doesn't have any meaning Reicha. Yet, Rabbi Meir says it's a sword. The only way to say it's a sword is Reicha Milti, so he has to say it's a Machloket Tanayim. The Abaye, Milema Tanayi. According to Abaye, it doesn't mean, or it's not automatic, that you have to assume that it is a machloket tanaim. Amar lecha Abaye, love me, eat marla. Don't we have a qualification of that Mishnah? Amar Rava bar Barachan, Amar Reish Lakish, bepat chama v'chavit ptucha. If you have hot bread and an open barrel, dibri akol asura. Both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda agree that it's asur. If you say that, then everybody agrees, reicha milti. It's just a question if whether the flavor is imparted or not. That's going to be the difference between them. But by definition, if you say that hot bread on an open barrel means that it's problematic, that means that both Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda hold Reicha Milti, and therefore Abai says that I don't have to say it's a machloket. I can say everybody agrees that Reicha Milti. B'pat sonenet u'b'chavit migufa. If you have cold bread that's sitting on the top of a sealed barrel, dibri akol mutaret. Everybody agrees that it's mutar. There's no flavor imparted because it's cold bread, which is less absorptive, and it's a covered wine barrel, so the wine flavor can't get through. Lo nechlegu, their machloket is ela bepat chama v'chavit migufa. You have hot bread on top of a sealed barrel. Upat sonenet v'chavit ptucha. You have cold bread on top of an open barrel. And there, Rabbi Meir says it's asur, and Rabbi Yehuda says it's mutar. Question is, when you only have one of the two items that would allow for the flavor to be imparted, is that significant enough? V'hadidi nami. And I'm saying here that the case of Batiyak, Bat Chama v'chavit ptucha dami, is the equivalent of an open barrel with hot bread on top of it. The case where you're smelling the wine, that's the same thing. It's something where it's open and you're going directly, putting your nose directly into that part where the smell is coming from. Therefore, it's the equivalent of Bat Chama with a chavit ptucha, which means that the flavor is imparted, or it's considered here as if you're ingesting that flavor. It's as if you're drinking the item. So over here, there are two things to discuss, one of which is, does Rava accept this statement of Rava Bar Chana Mereish Lakish? This qualification of the Mishnah, does Rava accept it? Seemingly, Rava does not accept it, because Rava says it's a machloket tanaim, whereas this qualification would indicate that Rava would agree that it's not a machloket tanaim, and that Reicha Milti. And then that might be in contradiction with Rava's position over here. The answer to that might be what we saw in the Balei Tosafot before. So on the surface, you would seem that Rava rejects this qualification because it goes against his position that Recha is La Milti. And if you say both Rav Yehuda and Rav Meir agree that Recha Milti, then it seems to be in contradiction to Rava, and therefore Rava is not going to explain the Mishnah that way. But there are Rishonim, and the Bar Tosfot are amongst them, that believe that Rava does accept this qualification. That goes back to the hierarchy that we discussed in the Bar Tosfot before. And that's what the Bar Tosfot says over here, that the highest level of absorption is a case of pat chama mechavit tucha. If hot bread on top of an open barrel, there, kule yama, everybody agrees it's asur. Even Rava, even Levi in the Gemara in Pesachim, agrees that it's asur. So then in that way we can reconcile Rava with that qualification, because everybody agrees that's asur, because that's the most powerful types of absorption. You have an item that is absorptive in nature because it's hot bread, and you have wine barrel that's open that's giving off that flavor, and the wine's right there, that everybody agrees is asur. Vereach basar, when you have fatty meat with melder meat inside of an oven, that's the machloket of Rav and Levi. In the machloket in the Gemara Pesachim is where you have meat of nevela and kosher meat in the same oven, or you have a korban pesach and a regular meat in the same oven cooking, or two korbanei pesach in the same oven, does the meat impart flavor to the other meat? So over there it's fatty meat, and the fatty meat gives off that flavor, and there we have machloket Rav and Levi. Rav says it's asur because the flavor is imparted. Levi says it's mutar because the flavor is not imparted. B'kaim along k'rav, and we passing like Rav, that flavor is imparted when you cook in an oven. V'reach debat tiha, and that same middle level is also bat tiha, which is the barrel that you open up and you get the smell. B'kaim along the rova, and we bear passing like rova because of the fact that the pungency and the concentration of the wine is so powerful that it's actually negative. And that negativity overrides the ingestion of it through the smell. And that's why Rova thinks that it's Recha La Milta. He won't disagree with Rav by Basar, where it's not overwhelming, it's imparting flavor, that it's a sur, but over here it's going to be Mutar. Now, according to Bali, just well point out, it's Mutar only if the Jew's not getting paid to smell it, or he's not getting any kudos from the Goy, because otherwise then he's getting benefit from a Yayin Nesech, and it would be a sur. So it just has to be that he's smelling it gratis, without any compliments to come from it, and without any money being paid for it. Lamata mehem, the lowest level of flavor imparting is patzoneret v'chavit p'tucha patchama v'chavit migufa. In case where it's cold bread on an open barrel or hot bread on a closed barrel. And in that case, you have the machloket Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda. And then, v'mutar l'kuleyama, there's one level where everybody says it's mutar, which is you have cold bread on a sealed barrel. And in that way, the Bali Tzvot create a hierarchy that actually separates out the machlokot between these different areas, and makes them different. And that means that you can reconcile anybody with any machloket, including Rova, with the qualification of Rabba Bar Barchana, and the machloket Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, as well as Rova or Abaye, with the case of Rav and Levi in the Gemara Pesachim, because these are all different levels or types of flavor imparting that have different rules and different meaning to them. There is one level where everybody agrees that it is absorptive and it's problematic, that's hot bread on an open barrel. There's one where everybody agrees it's totally mutar, it's cold bread on a sealed barrel. But in between, you have different issues, and those issues will impact on what the loch is. But then the Bali Tosfot goes on to say something which has major and major implications to the locha. She says that that machok between Rav and Levi, about whether the fats of the meat impart flavor to another item that's been cooked in the oven, is only true b'tanurim shalahem, in their ovens, which were very small. It says, but our ovens that are bigger, there is no problem of cooking milk and meat together, or even fatty meats inside of that oven, because there's enough airflow in the oven, as long as the oven's not completely sealed to the point where nothing can escape from it, and it's not absolutely sealed in. And therefore, it's mutar to cook these different items. And he says you can cook milkshiks and fleishiks in the same oven, as long as it's a bigger oven, bigger than what they had in the time of the Gemara. And it, even according to Rav, that would not be a problem, because it's avav turim, garuim shalanu, you don't have to worry. As long as not the entrance to the oven is not completely sealed. You can cook pashtida, which was like a dough with meat in it, in this other item that was made out of cheese, even in a single oven. They can't touch each other. Recording Pala Balas. If the fat of the Isur then falls onto, I guess it's the coals or the pan down below that has the fire on it. Basur yitain heter alea koyom. If that happens, you can't put any heter onto that pan or to that cooking area for the entire day. Miu, kashein abat yoma, after 24 hours, mutar lishtamesh balachatchila. You can use it even lachatchila, because he says, if we didn't allow this, it'd be a huge problem, because no goy is going to listen to us to change out the pala every time, because maybe some of the fat from the non-kosher items fell on there, and therefore you just have to wait till it's enubet yomo, that it's 24 hours, and then you can cook in that oven, beheter gamur. Based on this, I know that Rabbi Willig Paskins, that in the modern day ovens today, that you don't need a separate milchik and fleshik oven, as long as you're not dealing with adim, you're not dealing with moisture or steam that's coming out of the item, as long as the item's not liquid or heavily liquid, you actually can cook meat and milk items in the same oven at the same time, and you won't even have to cover those items. Now the truth is today that we try to be makpid to cover the items, meaning that we cover one of the items that are in there. Certain items you'll do open because they're not liquid. What we try to do is like maybe milchiks you leave open and fleishiks you cover, and that way you prevent any chashash whatsoever of them mixing. But Rabbi Willig, based on this Baal Tosfot, wants to suggest that even if they're both uncovered, it's not a problem as long as they're not touching each other, and as long as there's no adim, there's no actual moisture or steam that's coming over there that would impart flavor, because that creates a secondary or more problematic passage of flavor. And that would be matter that you don't need to have separate ovens for milk and fleishiks. It happens to be easier to deal with that because then you don't have to worry about anything. But many people who have a single oven can deal with it in this way, and they may not even have to cover the items inside of the oven based on that. All right, we're going to stop here by the two dots in the top of Samach Zayin Amud Aleph.